Hi, everyone, and welcome to Taste of True Crime Podcast. I'm Abby.
I'm Samantha.
And today we are covering Catherine Knight. She is a
crazy,
strange individual. This episode does include violence against animals and domestic violence. We just wanted to let that be known up front, so no surprises. We are a laid-back discussion type podcast. We do our research, but we are not your Forensic Files type of podcast. We don't want you to think that we are downplaying the crime or, you know, taking it as a joke, because it's definitely not. But it is in our personalities, both of us, to play around a lot. So there's that. We apologize if we pronounce something wrong or say something incorrectly. If you know that we are saying something incorrectly or we've said something, pronounced something wrong, please feel free to let us know. And that's that. Do you have anything? All right.
That's all I got.
All right. Let's. Wait.
That's all you got.
Let's dive right in. So typically we don't like to talk too much about the actual murder themselves, but in this case it's going to be a little different.
Okay, you know, we say that
and we kind
of, I think we do.
Yeah,
I think that's how we originally wanted to start.
Mm-hmm.
But I think our brains are dysfunctional
and we talk about
and we do talk shitty about them because we want to know the beginning
and why they are the way that they are.
Exactly.
So, yeah, in this one, we definitely do.
Yes.
You're going to learn a lot about Catherine Knight and her crazy self.
And I understand there is mental health situations.
She had.
But this bitch is crazy.
Right. So, basically, her mental health issues are not the reason that she did what she did.
She's just crazy.
Correct.
So, let's just start with that.
All right.
And lead into her childhood.
So let's start in her early life. Catherine Knight was born on October 24th, 1955 in Tenterfield, Australia. Catherine was a twin. Her sister's name is Joy. Complete opposite of what she was.
Whoops.
And they were the product of an affair between her mother, Barbara, and their father, Ken Knight. Barbara had four other children, all boys, with her first husband, and even met Ken Knight through her husband. So, she had an affair with her husband's friend, and that resulted in the twinsies. Catherine and Joy. Catherine had a pretty chaotic childhood, but again, that is not an excuse for what you hear going on into this episode. Her father was a violent alcoholic, and he actually raped her mother multiple times a day.
In front of them, right?
Yeah, in front of them.
Literally in front
of them. Like, they would see it happening and hear it happening, and
this was just normal to them.
Right, like, they thought
that's how women were treated.
Correct.
And husband and wife live happily ever after.
And, yeah. Barbara would always have bruises and black eyes, and like Sam just said, the kids ended up seeing this as normal, like, normal behavior. Barbara would tell her children the intimate details of her sex life, and she was very vocal about how much she hated men. Catherine claimed that she was sexually assaulted by her own half-brothers until she was 11. The children were also often beaten with different objects. I think they said, like, wires.
Whatever
they could find, they were beaten with.
And she also claimed that she was not sexually assaulted by her father.
Mm-hmm. That it was her half-brothers.
But
nobody knows that for sure. The psychiatrist acknowledged that, yes, she had been raped and abused, but they couldn't say for sure
she never who admitted did it. That.
Right.
Right.
So in school, Catherine was a bully who terrorized smaller children. She never learned how to read or write, and she quit school at the age of 15 to work at a clothing factory. A year later, she got her dream job at a slaughterhouse, cutting out the internal organs of animals. She hung her butcher knives over her bed just in case she ever needed. So while she was working in the butcher shop, Catherine met David Kellett. He was a raging alcoholic and was prone to getting into fights, but otherwise was a decent person while he wasn't drunk. At one point, Catherine surprised him and actually joined in on one of his drunken fights, like fist flying and all.
Let's go.
He realized quickly that Catherine was capable of doing more damage than what she could with her fist and found himself being dominated by her. When I read that, I was like picturing her in like leather outfits. I don't know. Don't ask.
Well, and she's also like from what we've.
She was a bigger girl.
She was a big.
Not like fat, but like big boned.
Big boned, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's kind of awkward. But anyway.
And apparently dominated most people in her life.
From still childhood.
To this day in prison.
In prison, yeah.
Yes.
So, in 1974, she convinced him to marry her. He was heavily intoxicated the whole time. Whoops. And her own mother even tried to warn him about her daughter's temper. She told him, "Watch out. You better watch this one or she'll fucking kill you. She's got something loose. She's got a screw loose somewhere." That's the motherly advice that was given to her son-in-law.
Sounds familiar.
I would have ran for the hills. On their wedding night, they had sex 3 times. But apparently that was not enough for her because David fell asleep before they could go again. And she was so angry, she started to strangle him and punch him in the face. He woke up and was able to fight her off. The reasoning behind her anger was that they had only consummated their marriage 3 times and that her mother had consummated hers 5 times.
Oh, so it's a game.
First of fucking all. Okay. How do you know that?
Well, apparently her mother did share all that information. So, not normal.
But why is it a competition?
You know, when no. I'm drinking,
one and done.
We're having a good time the first go round.
And then we're night-night.
And then it's time to go to bed.
Thank
you.
We're
going to shower. If we're that drunk, we might not shower, but we usually shower. But we're going to bed.
I don't know. So, you know.
Not punching you in the face.
Or strangling you or with a pillow. Suffocating you with a pillow. But their marriage lasted for 10 years.
Well, look at that.
There was a time when she was pregnant. And she lit all of his clothes on fire and hit him in the back of the head with a frying pan because he was late coming home from a dart competition. Like, you better throw them darts and get your ass home.
And you know those frying pans were not light back in the Mm-mm. day.
And I can just imagine that. Good Lord. He probably had cerebral concussions.
You would think.
In May 1976, shortly after their daughter Melissa was born, David had enough of the abuse and left her for another woman. Ooh, when he left, she threatened to slice up the baby and swung her newborn daughter around by her ankles.
And it only gets worse from there.
The next day after he left, she was seen pushing Melissa in a stroller down the street violently, throwing it from side to side and slamming it into poles and fences. After this, she was admitted to a psychiatric hospital, but was quickly released. After she was released, she went and placed Melissa on some train tracks. Yep, train tracks.
Yep.
Right before a train was due. While her baby was laying on the train tracks, she went into town, stole an axe, and was swinging it around at people screaming she was going to kill everybody. A man known as Old Ted was looking for food near the tracks and found Melissa. He rescued her only a few minutes before the train came. She was arrested this time and taken back to the psychiatric hospital.
But guess what happened?
She signed herself out the next day and they gave her her child back. Make it make sense, Jesus.
It's not. It's not going to happen.
After this, she was staying with her parents for a while. She told them she needed to go home to get a few things, so she took Melissa to their home and picked up knives, scissors, and bandages.
First of all, my parents would not let me take my baby.
After I put her on the train track. But, you know, her life was dysfunctional, so.
Oh, I forgot her parents were fucked up.
Yeah.
There's that. Mm-hmm. Damn it.
So she went and got those items, and she took these items and Melissa, who was still an infant, to a young teenager's house that she worked with. The boy's mother answered the door and she told her that her baby was sick and she needed a ride to the hospital. Catherine then told the woman that she was going to her house down the street to pick up a few things And the woman could pick her up there. The woman packed up her kids and then went to get Catherine. When Catherine saw all of the kids in the car, she got angry, pulled out a blade, and said, "This is too many. I'm going to have to get rid of a couple of you."
Bitch.
And then she started swinging the knife and cut one of the girl's cheeks that was in the car. She held them hostage and told the mother to drive her to Queensland to find her husband, David. You know, the one that left her for another woman. The family convinced her to stop at the gas station for gas. And she agrees and says that she can also cash her check while they are there.
Oh, because that's, you know what, you know, while we're here.
While we're here.
And I've cut your child in her face and I'm holding the rest of you hostage.
Let me get my monies.
Let me get my money.
While she is cashing her check, the family escapes and locks himself into an office in the gas station. Catherine gets angry and she used her bare fucking hands to rip the blade off of a lawnmower that was attached to the back of a tractor.
That's a huge bitch.
She took the blade off to try to hack the door down to get to the family. This all happens while she's holding her infant, Melissa. She finally got into the room and grabbed a little boy and put a knife against his throat. And the only reason she didn't kill him is because the police showed up. She was admitted again to the psych hospital.
Third time.
There were no charges filed against her.
Third time is no charm in this situation. At all.
In the hospital, she told one of the nurses that she wanted to kill the mechanic at that gas station for fixing David's car, which allowed him to leave her. Because it's his fault, you know. She fixed his car, now David can go. She also intended to kill David and his mother when she arrived in Queensland. When cops told David this, he moved back to town to be with her.
To be with her.
And when she was released from the mental hospital, she was released to David and his mother. You know, the ones that she wanted to kill. In 1980, they did it again. They had another daughter. And after much more abuse and chaos, Catherine left David in 1984.
Now she's tired of it.
So now she's tired of abusing him and shit, and she's ready to move on.
Who am I going to abuse next?
Well, it gets better.
Who else am I going to have kids with?
She moved back with her parents for a while. And then into a house of her own, and she returned back to work at the slaughterhouse.
Her favorite place.
Then she injured her back on purpose the following year and went on disability. In 1986, she met David Saunders. He was a 38-year-old miner. A few months after they met, he moved in with her and her daughters, Melissa and Natasha. He did keep his old apartment, which upset Catherine, and she was always wondering what he was doing keeping that apartment. But when they'd fight, she'd always kick him out, and that was where he would go. So it's like, I'm mad at you for having this apartment, but I'm going to kick you out.
Send you there.
And so you can go back there.
Makes sense. Logical.
In May 1987, they got into an argument. She went outside and cut his 8-week-old puppy's throat in front of him. Saunders' friend said it wasn't unusual for him to show up with cuts and bruises on his face. In June 1988, she gave birth to her third daughter that she named Barbara after her mother. Hmm. Not too long after Catherine hit Saunders in the face with an iron and stabbed him in the stomach with scissors, he moved back to his apartment.
I wonder what pushed him to do that.
Was it the iron or was it the scissors? I don't know.
Who knows?
So later he ended up back at their home to get his clothes, which she had already cut up. And he ended up staying, of course, you know, because I don't know. I don't know. I have no words because it's like, what?
How do you
stay there?
No, I don't understand.
You endure all this abuse and you didn't get enough?
Mm-mm.
So before this relationship finally ended, she vandalized his car and overdosed on sleeping pills to pretend to commit suicide. She just did enough to make it look like she attempted to, but really didn't want to. She knew what she was doing type thing. So she went back to the psych ward and he left. He actually had to take a leave from work and go into hiding to get away from Catherine. A grown-ass man. You have to go into hiding to get away from her. So Several months later, he returned to see his daughter and found out that Catherine, first of all, the fucking...
Are you about to tell me that she's going to be pregnant again?
No, no, no. It gets better.
Okay.
She had the audacity to go to the police and say she was afraid of him, and they issued her a restraining order against him. So, not only was she abusing the men in her life, she was also abusing her children. And had even punched her daughter, Melissa, in the face at one point and knocked her out.
And wasn't it just because she was, like, literally...
She was just being a kid.
She was having a conversation with another female.
Yeah.
Another woman.
Mm-hmm.
The kid came in, and she walked over there. Instead of saying, hey, you're interrupting us. Mm-hmm.
You know, let the adults
she
talk.
She walked over to her daughter.
And just punched her down in the face.
And punched her in the face.
And knocked her out.
And knocked her out.
Yeah, and her friend did nothing. So apparently not only was she a shit individual, she was hanging around
with shit individuals. Rage.
Yeah. And so in 1990, she met a man named John Chillingworth. He was 43 and a former coworker. Within weeks of meeting, Catherine became pregnant. Mm. And in 1991, she gave birth to a son they named Eric. She refused to let John move into her home that she had just inherited from her mother who had passed away.
Well, we got rid of one scumbag.
Right? She decorated that home with animal skins, horns, animal traps, old boots, rakes, pitchforks, and other crazy-ass things.
Which, if it wasn't her, would be normal for a butcher-type
right,
person,
maybe.
Hunter person.
I think she did the most, though.
She's extra, and this is too much.
So, that relationship lasted for 3 years, and it ended when she smashed his fake teeth. Were they in his mouth? I don't know.
I mean, were they fake prior or after?
But that shit is expensive.
It's not nice.
Not at all. I'm talking about expensive. You're talking about it's not nice. Fuck. Woo! All right, and here's where shit gets real. So.
Realer.
Realer than real. She met John Price at a club shortly after this. John was born on January 6, 1955. He was a father of three children who he shared with his ex-wife, Colleen, and they had a very amicable relationship. And actually, they weren't officially divorced. They were separated, and I guess they were going to, like, work on things, and then he met Catherine, which was the biggest mistake of his life. So, his daughter stayed living with her mother, but his two older children lived with him. He did know about her violent reputation, but apparently he thought he could change her.
Like most people.
Right. That's people typically, think that. They think that you can change someone when in reality they have to want to change themselves.
And the bitch is crazy.
So, but he did constantly refuse to marry her. She eventually stole money from him and bought her own engagement ring. Lord have mercy. In 1988, Catherine and Price were arguing about the fact that he wouldn't marry her. And then she was angry that he had a will and everything in the will was left to his kids and not her.
How the fuck could he?
Like, what?
Like, why would you do that, sir?
Any fucking normal person be completely okay with that.
That was sarcasm, by the way, when I said
I'm
that.
Just like, why? So, it gets even... One night, she videotaped items in his shed that he had allegedly stolen from his job and sent them to his boss. But actually, they were medical kits. And
stuff already thrown away.
And right? It was thrown in the garbage
like
already.
Expired.
Right. And he just got them out of the garbage and just had them to have them. He got fired from the job after working there for 17 years, and he lost his pension. So, all because of her. Because she's fucking spiteful and just being a bitch to be a bitch. The day he was fired, he kicked her out of his home. But a few months later, they got back together. He wouldn't let her move in, though. They started fighting more frequently. And at one point, Catherine's first husband, David, caught up with John Price. And he actually told David that he really wanted to leave Catherine, but he was too scared of her. Imagine that. Like, I can't. Like, the fear that he must have had of this woman to, like, I can't leave her because I'm scared of what she'll do.
And then, like, his most if I remember correctly, the thing he feared the most was that she was going to hurt his kids.
Yes, that was what he was most concerned about, was his children. Because, you know, she's unpredictable. There ain't right. no fucking telling.
I mean, she leaves her baby on a train track. Right. So there's that.
So the day before Price was killed, Catherine was acting very strangely. She went to her sister's house to get a video camera. And then she went to her daughter Natasha's and started recording herself playing with Natasha's baby. So this weird-ass bitch.
Weird-ass man.
She wasn't just recording herself playing with Natasha's baby. She was letting the baby play with her chest.
Like her boobs.
Like, yeah.
Without a shirt.
Yeah. She unbuttoned her shirt.
Buttoned her shirt.
And was recording the baby playing with her chest.
With her old-ass Nana boobs.
And my notes said, which is weird as fuck. Because it is.
Like, even when I was breastfeeding, my baby was not playing with my boobs.
You're eating and you're done.
You're done.
Move along.
That's it.
So, apparently, she also took Natasha out to dinner, which she never did. And she then asked Natasha if she could leave her two younger kids with her that night, even though they had no clothes and had school the next day. So, here's where shit gets realer than real.
Realer than real than real.
On February 29, 2000, John Price took out a restraining order on Catherine to protect his children and himself. He also told his new co-workers that if he did not show up the next day, it is because she killed him. They begged him not to go home, but he did not want her to kill his children, so he told them he had to. As a precaution, he sent his kids to their mom's house. He then spent that evening with his neighbors and went home into bed around 11 p.m.
Can we talk about real quick how he has a restraining order on her?
On her.
She calls the cops on him.
Mm-hmm.
They come to his home where he has a restraining order against her, and mm-hmm. she's called the cops on him, and they still do not make her leave his home.
Nope.
They literally tell him he will have to file an eviction
notice
mm-hmm. to have her removed but from his home.
Really, she didn't live there, so that's
she didn't even live there.
That's what threw me off.
I'm confused
at all.
I'm filing a restraining order.
Mm-mm.
She's calling the cops on me. Why can't you remove this woman from my home?
That's,
what?
That failed him completely. So, but you know what? While he was asleep, she arrived at his house. She watched TV for a little bit, took a shower, and then she woke him up so they could have sex.
Oh, wait. They watched. What did they watch?
Oh, God.
Star Trek?
Something like that. Something I would never watch. That's
important, but I remembered that part.
They watched something.
They watched Star Trek, then had sex.
So, after that, he fell asleep. And then she proceeded to pull out her butcher knives and she stabbed him 37 times in both the front and back of his body. According to the evidence, he woke up and tried to turn the light on and get away. She chased him through the house and he did manage to get outside, but she ended up dragging him back inside. First of all, she's a fucking brute. Anyway, there was a huge amount of blood everywhere. After he died, she went, took a shower, stole his ATM card, and drove to the ATM to take $1,000 from his account. Several hours after he died, she skinned his whole body in one whole piece.
One whole piece.
So, basically, this was a skin suit, pretty much.
And then she hung it out to dry.
Yeah.
In the house.
But she left a small piece of skin on the body, which showed the scar where she had stabbed him previously.
Psycho bitch.
At his post-mortem examination, the mortician was able to sew the skin back to his body. That's how meticulously that she did that. That's how skilled.
Like, this was no amount of...
Like, she took her time.
Right.
Pretty much.
She knew what the fuck she was right. doing. She was not in La La Land, which you will come to find out she tries to portray. She was,
mm-hmm.
doesn't remember shit, but.
So, yeah. When she was done, the skin was hung on a hook at the entrance of the house It stayed there until the police officers brought it down. So, it's not funny. I'm laughing at something else. Sorry, y'all. So, she then decapitated him and put his head in a pot with vegetables on the stove. She cut off pieces of his butt and cooked them. She served them with a baked potato, pumpkin, and other vegetables. She then set up plates with his meat and the stew at the table with note cards addressed to his two children. And these notes have never been released to the public, so we don't know, you know, exactly what they say. But she also left a handwritten note in the middle of the night, in the middle of the table, accusing Price of things like raping her daughter. Price's head was found simmering in the pot, and she had arranged his body. Of course, you know, he doesn't have his head anymore, doesn't have his skin anymore. So she just arranges his body in an armchair with the left arm over an empty 2-liter, and his legs were crossed. When he didn't go to work, his employer sent someone to check on him. At the same time, his neighbor also went to check on him. They saw the blood on the front door in the front, like, porch area, and immediately called the police. When police arrived, they found Catherine Knight comatose in the bed from taking a large amount of pills.
They actually heard her snoring.
Yeah, she was in the bed snoring, but her, I don't know if she was, like, really trying to commit suicide and just kind of failed at it, but she was in the bed snoring while this man is, his head is in the pot on the stove.
They also, like, walked in there, first of all. Yeah. They walked in there in the dark, reaching around, trying to touch, feel their way through, felt what they thought was, like, a blanket, and turns out was his bodysuit, which they call it, like, a pelt.
Yeah.
Is what they call it, a pelt, mm-hmm. which was just his skin hanging over a meat, what do you call that, a meat...
Like a rope. Yeah. I don't know.
It's just hanging there.
Like, yeah, it was just hanging.
It was just hanging. And then they seen the drops of blood, and then they walked in the kitchen. And one of the cops actually talked about how it smelled like when his grandma cooked pot roast. Like, it was a pot roast. Oh, God. Smell.
But that's because, like, she had all that good. Fucking vegetables and
she
shit in there.
She had the vegetables. She had the meat. They walked in the kitchen. It was, you know, like you talked about the place settings for the two children.
Mm-hmm.
There was another place setting for the dog that had a piece of...
God knows what.
Him in there.
Right.
It was a piece of his meat. Two other place settings sitting on the counter
mm-hmm.
that look like literally when I cook pot roast with vegetables.
Yeah. And she also just, at one point had thrown like a piece of meat in the backyard. Like for what?
For the dog.
I cannot.
And then they followed the trail of blood. Drop, drop, drop. Oh, we hear snoring.
Mm-hmm.
Let's walk in there and see what the snoring is.
Fucking
there she
asleep.
Is. Fucking asleep.
Like she didn't
away.
Just murder and
Nothing
skin this
happened.
Man.
Mm-mm, no.
So, she offered to plead guilty to manslaughter, which, of course, was rejected.
How sweet of her.
Like, what? You thought you were going to get away that easy?
Well, she figured she got away with the last 12 things when she went to the freaking
mental hospital and everything else.
And they let her sign her ass out.
So, she was arraigned on March 2nd, 2001, on the charge of murdering John Price, and she pled not guilty. When the trial started, they offered the 60 jury members the option to be excused due to the nature of the photo evidence. Five of them accepted and left, but when it started, several more dropped out, and they had to redo the whole jury panel. For what? For nothing, because she then changed her plea to guilty. The jury was dismissed completely, and they actually did order a psych evaluation to make sure, like, she was competent. To,
fourth time's a charm.
Right. And her lawyers were going to defend her by claiming disassociation and amnesia. Nope.
Police officers.
Officers. Good Lord. She was claimed to be sane by two psychiatrists.
What?
She was sentenced to life in prison without parole, and this made her the first woman in Australia to get this sentence. Catherine showed no remorse at all.
This bitch deserved this sentence about For sure. 20 years ago.
In 2006, she appealed her sentence, saying it was too severe. Ma'am, You skin somebody and
alive.
Decapitated.
No, he wasn't alive.
Decapitated.
He was dead, but
you anyway, you cut his head off.
Yes.
And you
cooked him like good stew.
Fucking God.
And then not only did you just cook him, you also
you wanted to feed him to his children.
Him to his kids and luckily, his dog.
They like I don't know what
not
she was
the dog you killed thinking in front of him the first time, but the other dog. Fuck. Crazy bitch.
But yeah, that appeal too was severe. Dismissed. And she is currently still in prison. She apparently runs the prison.
Yes.
Which is fucking absurd. But she's not allowed to go outside at all.
Correct.
If she goes anywhere at all, she has four guards on her at all times because she's considered like top of the, I don't know what it's called, but top like of the maximum security. Like she, this bitch can't go nowhere by herself. But still she manages to run the prison and she's still there.
There
where
she
deserves to be. So yeah, that is the case of Catherine Knight. The bitch is crazy in the head. And that's
welcome
all I can
to
say
Australia.
About that. So yeah, that's it. You have anything?
Thanks for joining and
yeah.
Listen for
thanks
that
for
mark
listening
where,
to that crazy shit.
Abby talks about
officers.
Police officers.
Good Lord.
She'll probably cut
you're
that
never
out,
gonna
but
let that
I'm
go.
I'm not gonna let it go.
I did cut it out. They can't hear me say that.
That's all right, because if you listen to or follow us on Facebook or Instagram,
yeah,
you will hear it.
Do that.
I will be posting that.
Oh, great.
Because it was great.
So yeah, follow us on Instagram at Taste of True Crime Podcast. Not to listen to me say God knows what, but just do it anyway.
Definitely to listen to that, because that is great.
Make sure you follow us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page and a Facebook group, Taste of True Crime Podcast. And if you have not, make sure you leave us a review, a good one preferably.
Thank you.
The more reviews we have, the higher on the list of true crime podcasts that we are, more people can find us and listen. So we
the
appreciate
more we will record.
If you do that, amen. So that's all I've got.
Have a great
day,
coronavirus
weekend, and until next time, bye guys.
Bye.